Hey, everybody. The Golden Retriever of Comedy Tour might be closed, but I'm still on the road. I'm still a stand-up comedian. We're taping the special in June. I got a couple shows that I'm going to be running through to, get it nice in there. Nice and right where we want it. So come check me out. First, I'm going to be at the Omaha Funny Bone, May 15th and 16th. Got four shows, bringing Brendan Sagalow. That's going to be a blast. May 6th, I'm going to be at the Avalon Theater for Netflix is a Joke. We're doing a movie watch along. We're watching a very fun J-Lo movie. It's already been approved. My guest is a very cool guest. It's Tim Dillon. May 6th, Avalon Theater, dansorder.com. May 15th and 16th, I'm going to be at the Funny Bone in Omaha, Nebraska. Four shows to really finish tightening that hour before we film it in June. I got Sagalow coming with me. Four shows, Omaha Funny Bone, May 15th and 16th. And then New Jersey Performing Arts Center. I'm going to be there June 5th. Friday, June 5th. It's the last time I'm running this hour before I tape it. Go get tickets at dansorder.com. I'm very excited about that. Also, a little surprise shows in June. June 1st and 2nd, if you live in Key West, Florida, go buy tickets, because I'm coming down to Key West on Monday, Tuesday. It's random, but it'll be fun as hell. DanSoder.com. I'm going to make sure those are up on DanSoder.com, too. Just go to DanSoder.com for a link. See you at Netflix is a Joke. I'll see you at Omaha, and I'll see you in New Jersey. I like junkyarding jokes. Because when you junkyard a joke, you can take a line from a bit that worked, but the bit didn't work.
Yeah.
But the line worked.
Right.
And then you take it out and you put it in another joke that works, and you go like, whoa, it's like a spark plug.
It's all a junkyard. Every hour is just like a couple survivors of a platoon strung together.
Yeah. You know what's funny?
With the illusion that this is what you always intended it to be.
Yeah.
Even though there's so much like things that didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, you have no idea how patched together this is.
That's the illusion, right? It's like it doesn't look
well patched. The illusion is we're I'm just talking.
Yeah.
We're just having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like I was saying that about Ali Sadiq. That's like one of my favorite things about him.
He's
like a guy where you go, those jokes look,
he's got that black hypnotism.
Yeah, it's just, you know what it is? That's just like I've seen white dudes that have it too. White dudes, Giannis has that. Giannis can, like,
talking.
He's doing bits, but you're like,
are we on, by the way?
Yeah, we've been on.
Okay. Yeah. All right, no, cool. I forget the old Marin's like recording, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like they're not doing that as much anymore.
We're just rolling?
Yeah.
Here's the deal. I don't have a premise for my podcast.
Yeah.
And I also, why I like doing this show is because I get to hang out with comics that I like.
That's how I
feel. And then I just hope the people that like me like them.
Yeah.
That's all this is.
It's just a way to see people.
That's all this is. Yeah, it really is. It is like a play date.
I love
podcasts. It's a podcast play date.
I love doing podcasts where they try to explain to you the premise, but it's just every podcast. But they try to set up like, so with this, you can just, we'll just talk and you can just take it wherever you want. Just you know, it's just a conversation. Just go wherever.
And you go, that's a podcast.
That's a podcast. That's not a theme.
Oh, we just want to make it like a hang.
And just like if there's a joke and you want to like commit to that joke, just do that. And if you want to riff.
That was like morning radio. Bob and Tom used to do that where they'd go, bring in five of your bits and we'll lead you into it. And you go, I'm just funny.
Yeah. We can just be funny.
You know, we can just hang out and I'll be funny.
But there are some funny comics who aren't funny.
Yeah. And,
all, you know what I mean?
I would say it is 70-30.
70, like...
Funny? 70% of comics are actually funny, and 30% of them are, like, mathematicians.
And they just
learn...
It's like autism, yeah.
Yeah,
And they're, like, very serious. But, I mean, you can be a great comedian. I saw an interview with Woody Allen where he's like, people meet me and they think I'm funny, but I'm actually miserable.
Yeah. You know what's funny, man, is, like... I've seen Woody Allen movies. I understand people think he's a genius.
Yeah.
I've never been a big fan.
Okay to say now.
Well, no, that's what
back in the day I would have shamed you, but I can't do that anymore. Back in the day I'd be like, you don't know comedy.
Can I tell you what? It's like I feel like a drunk that got through a car accident.
Yeah, yeah.
I went, I'm okay.
Back in the day, I would have been like, you don't know comedy, you're anti-Semitic. But you don't
see,
know.
My
and
argument,
now I got to be like, me neither.
Yeah. You go, what a monster. But my thing is it just missed me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Zeppelin. Yeah. Zeppelin missed me.
Yeah, yeah.
I got into my 30s. I listened to my late 20s, my early 30s. I listened to Zeppelin and I was like, oh, it's really good. Like Woody Allen. I listened to his stand-up. Very funny. Stand-up's very funny.
Incredible. Yeah.
I'm a Mel Brooks guy. I grew up with Mel Brooks.
Yeah, yeah.
My sense of humor is based on Mel Brooks's, like, that. When I just watched the Judd Apatow documentary about him, I was like hooting and hollering at the TV because it got me so excited.
Well, the thing about Mel Brooks, I love Mel Brooks too, and there's a great interview with Mel Brooks where they ask him if he's friends with Woody Allen, and he goes, no, nobody's friends with that guy.
Yeah. See, that's what I mean. Like, the fact that everything I watch about Mel Brooks, I feel there's a part of me that goes, oh, I'm disingenuous. I a lot of my personality is just Mel Brooks.
Well, he is also just, in my heart, I relate more to Woody Allen as a, like, I actually got into comedy because of Woody Allen.
Okay. And I got into comedy because of Mel Brooks.
Right. But Mel Brooks is also someone who, like, I would so much rather be that person.
Sure.
He's such a better person.
I always liked his comedy because there was, and they say this in the documentary, and it finally, like, they put words to it. It's based on love.
Yes.
And it's like, there's a lot of...
collaborative.
It's just very loving.
Yeah.
It's like, he talks shit about people and he makes fun of people, but you know the base level is like, I really always enjoyed the warmth of Mel Brooks.
Oh, yeah. And there's joy and fun. And,
and also, when I read Richard Pryor's autobiography and he talked about writing that...
And how he wrote for, what's it called? The big
Blazing Saddles.
But he wrote specifically on Blazing Saddles for... that he loved writing for the
Mongo.
Mongo. He's the one who wrote. Mongo's Pawn. He wrote that line. Yeah.
Yeah,
you think he's writing like the line
all
the
N-word stuff? Yeah. And it's like,
but
no.
That was that was Mel Brooks
in
but,
the documentary. Yeah, in the documentary, Mel said that he goes, Richard was very enamored with Mongo.
I think, like, he connected the sadness because Richard Pryor. There's such a sadness with him.
I mean, you read that biography and you're like, this guy had the worst childhood I've ever heard
crazy.
In my life.
His
first memory of making people laugh is slipping in shit in his front yard, and he just did it again because they laughed.
Yeah, oh, it's so...
So you go, oh, there's the hard wiring.
There is. Well, it's in his act, too. I mean, there are parts...
He walked in on his mom blowing a local politician. His mom
really?
Was a whore. His grandma ran a whorehouse.
Yeah, I know that, yeah.
And his dad was like, you know... like fucked her and like, but he was it like, wasn't like
he should have been like, well, you lost my vote, sir.
Yeah, I won't vote for you, sir. No, but Pryor was like the absolute to me example of the alchemy of like turning absolute shit into funny stuff.
Oh yeah,
because he was just so
he's the
funny.
Best comedian of all time, in my opinion.
The only reason I would put Chappelle above him is because Chappelle has had more hours of proof. I think
right.
Richard Pryor show and Chappelle show are even. I think Live in Concert 1978 and Killing Them Softly are even.
Now, I think Live in Concert to me is bad. I mean, obviously, Killing Them Softly is great.
I don't know, man.
But
Killing Them
Concert,
Softly starts and doesn't stop.
It's true. They're both and like two. They're both like top five. But
Live in Concert has moments where he dials it in and you go, this is the greatest thing. The story of his dad having a heart attack and fucking at the same time is like one of my favorite bits of
it. It's also like, can I really quickly douchely promote my special? Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to put the link in here.
Okay, all right. Well, never mind.
No,
now I feel like an asshole.
No, if you go watch Ron on special. It's
morbidly out, Jewish.
Morbidly
on
Jewish. If you can't tell he's Jewish, he is Jewish. He's morbidly Jewish.
All right, sorry.
But no, dude, the whole, the link's
okay,
in the
good.
Bio.
Okay, good. Never mind. Yeah, I just always
I get it.
Yeah.
I don't do
you
intros.
Know, I go on like, you
Ron
know,
Hirschberg,
some radio fucking, show to promote my special, and then I'm just talking about dildos and fucking. At the end, I'm like, I never brought it up.
There's no need. Yeah, well, absolutely. And I'll do it at the end, too. I'll really make sure. If they stay to the end, I'm really going to promo the fuck out of your special.
But, I mean, Live in Concert, when you watch it, you're like, I don't even know. This. It like transcends stand-up. It's like a one-man show in a way. It's like some of it's just like pure physicality. It's wild.
Comes out with the lights still on. Mm-hmm. Surprises everyone.
Which is
which everyone thought Louis did first.
Yeah,
but you're like, no, that's a Richard Pryor move. Number two.
Everyone thought Louis did first. That should be the name of like of our era. He writing an hour once a year.
Yeah,
George Carlin never did that.
Did Carlin do it once a year?
I'm pretty sure.
Because I know that's some British shit. That's yeah. like Edinburgh.
They
like,
do it once a year and have a fucking theme.
Yeah. And they have it all connect, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe work on it 2 years.
Yeah.
That's always my advice.
The Bill
to those
Burr
shows.
Formula. Yeah.
But Burr had a great quote where he said it should be at least 2 to 3 years because you're a different person. You like grow enough in 3 years that you're a different person.
It's true. But I guess I've been doing once a year, but.
Really?
I got nothing else going on.
But like, well, that's not true because you write shit and you do a lot of other stuff. But what you do once a year, you have an hour?
A little, one, a year and change. I'm the first person to do that, by the way.
Ronan did it first. Oh, yeah. Carlin did 10. I know he did 10 HBOs, but well, he did 14. Oh, some of these must be album. Oh, these are HBO specials. He did 14 HBO
yeah,
specials.
Yeah, I think it was once a year, I think. Maybe yeah. not, yeah.
The Life is Worth Losing one is the second to last one. That was the one
Ones where he starts rhyming, you're like, maybe it's time to retire.
Yeah.
The one when he comes out as Dr. Seuss.
Did you watch that documentary about him?
I didn't.
I'm going to tell you right now, all you need to watch as a comedian is the last 15 minutes of the first episode.
Really?
There's 2 episodes, and the whole first episode is about his early life growing up in Harlem, him being in the armed services, him kind of finding his way. He starts doing comedy. He's silly. And then it goes through his first big push of Hippy Dippy Weatherman and all the fucking things. And then it gets to the 70s, and it ends with everyone shitting on him for rhyming. And they're like, they show SEC TV make fun of him.
Oh, really?
Where he's like, I've ordered green beans. Why can't they be red beans?
Or that's you never see blue and blueberry. Why is blueberries blue?
And it's Rick Moranis doing a really funny impression of bearded.
No, I don't want brown. Eggs and ham. No, I don't want.
It's exactly it. And then it shows, it's Cheech and Chong are talking about it. And
that's
Cheech
so
has
funny.
A quote where he goes, man, fuck George Carlin. No one gives a fuck about him. And they start, I'll give credit to Apatow on this. The way he directed it is great because it starts doing that thing where it shows a criticism, shows another one, and then starts doing that thing where it goes fast, where it's like,
yeah.
And you see all the criticisms. And then it cuts to George Carlin's notebook. And he's like, I'm going to prove all of them wrong. Like, I'm going to show them what's up. And it's like a ramp up.
Yeah.
And then it shows Bill Burr, and he's like interviewing Bill Burr. And he's like, yeah, me and my friends went to go see him at the 80s, and we thought we were going to go watch a washed up dude. We were like going to make fun of him. And
wow.
He's like, and then he comes out and he's a fucking howitzer. Just like da, 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 da. And it's like, dude, that part.
It's like the anger from getting attacked.
Yeah.
It made him too angry to rhyme anymore.
Yeah. He was like, I don't care if the words connect. But I watched that in a hotel room and I was ready to run through a wall.
That's amazing.
I watched it like after a Thursday night show at a club and I was like, it's fucking incredible.
Well, people always like, people become legends and then you think their whole career was like just on the
perfect.
Up. And it's just not true. There's so many moments where people are like, he's done.
Yeah.
So many moments where people are like, Steven Spielberg's done.
Yeah.
Or like, whatever. You know
Dude,
what I mean?
The Spielberg thing, when he did Schindler's List, everyone was like, what the fuck are you doing? You make feel-good movies.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, well, I'm a Jew and I want to make a movie about the Holocaust. And they're like,
all right, fine.
But they were also like, I don't think people are going to like it.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the greatest movies of all time. And if it's just like an incredible movie. And there's like a lot
everything.
Of
everything. Every writer, Hemingway, like was a drug washed out at times. It's like, but then when you look back, you're like, oh, they were a legend the whole time, you know?
Well, that was my thing with, you know, kind of a hacky thing, but I really liked Hunter S. Thompson when I got to college. But
hacky.
I liked his writing.
Why is it hacky?
Because it was hacky because the other people that liked Hunter S. Thompson liked him because he was a drug addict.
Oh, no. In fact, his drug addict kept him from being a greater writer.
Yeah. And like Douglas Brinkley, who used to run his like...
Yeah.
He like... I think is like the executor of his literary estate or something. I used to be super into Hunter S. Thompson's writing.
It's great. From my hometown.
Yeah, Louisville, Kentucky.
I think
and Fear, Cassius Clay.
Yep. I think Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is like one of the top 5 funniest books of all time. And
it's
he has a lot of other great books.
I would say his best book is Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail in 1972.
Where he has an acid flashback during, he's like writing about, he's like on the plane doing journalism for the president. He's like, oh shit, what are my acid flashbacks?
I think that's the best book about modern American politics.
I did love that book.
It's fucking phenomenal. And if you read it around an election cycle, it holds up in a very spooky way.
Yeah, no.
Because he says basically, like, if you want to get elected in this country, you got to bash the other guy and be unapologetic and be unethical. And he's like,
because there was the other guy who got who was like actually a really good politician, but they found out he had mental.
It was McGovern's first pick for vice president.
Yeah, yeah.
He was, I think, the governor of South Dakota, and it had been proven that he had been institutionalized and had electric shock therapy, and it ruined it. And
he was like legitimately good.
Yeah, he was aligned with McGovern on a lot of his policies, and they were running it. But the thing about Hunter S. Thompson is he starts doing cocaine in the 80s, and his writing goes to shit.
I know. The drug thing, it's the opposite of what people think. Yeah,
he was all fucked up on drugs, and you're like, no, man, this is a guy that when he was a kid would read on his typewriter.
Type out Hemingway,
to the whole hear book. The rhythm of the keys. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, that's a guy.
I've always loved, like, there's just something about his sentences when I read them, I just get excited.
Yeah.
There's just something so cool.
Yeah.
The way he writes, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but it's just
I would say for anybody that hasn't read, that if you don't want to read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas or on the campaign trail, Hell's Angels is great. But I would say look up the book Generation of Swine, because he's on cocaine in some of it, but he's still got his fastball.
Yeah.
So he's like writing a lot of stuff. He writes about Reagan a lot in it.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, this guy nailed it.
I think I've read that one.
Yeah, it's great. It's right there. It's right behind you. It's the yellow backed one.
I don't know why, but I just love the way he uses the ampersand, you know?
Yeah. He smashes an ampersand.
He crushes it. I just love it. Every time he has it, I'm like, it's so cool.
But I also feel
like AND is for fucking squares.
Yeah. He's like, why would I use a fucking AND?
Like a bitch.
Well, his thing was always, he said F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote the perfect book in The Great Gatsby because it's so concise and it's so short.
Yeah.
So he was like struggling to get Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas down to the shortest he could. Because he wanted it to be as concise as The Great Gatsby.
Wow, yeah. No, I mean, it's a fucking amazing book. It is so funny.
But then when Hunter S. Thompson talks about it, they're like, you know, he had a suitcase full of drugs. And it's like,
yeah,
you should also look into more how fascinating the person Oscar Acosta was.
Oh, the lawyer?
It was the lawyer.
Yeah,
because he was a Chicano lawyer from L.A. that was like in these streets.
He
was in these streets, like the street gangs, the Latin street gangs were like down with him. He was a lawyer. He'd get these guys out of jail and shit.
I just remember,
and he was scary.
He was amazing. Yeah.
He was like he called him the big brown buffalo.
Yeah.
He was like fucking scary dude.
I just remember this one line that I've always loved in it, where they go to like a drug conference. It's like some kind of police. And he's like,
That was in Las Vegas.
Yeah. And he's like, we felt like we of the the junkies or whatever should have a voice in this meeting or something.
Yeah.
I forget the line, but it's such a great
line.
Yeah,
was this, because the first part of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas was him going to cover the Mint motorcycle race, like the 400 Sports Illustrated.
Right,
they hired him, and then it just became a disaster.
Because
he went to Vegas and did a bunch of drugs. And then when he sent it in to Jon Wenner at Rolling Stone, Jon Wenner was like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he would just like fax him. He would just fax him.
It feels like notes. Like it's concise, but it feels like you're reading notes. And there's such a, it's just very present.
Yeah.
Like it just feels so real.
Yeah.
And it is one of the funniest books of all time because it is both really funny, but also just like, you know, it's happening.
Yeah.
And that's
he's not being... Guys, Mother's Day is on the way. What do I mean by that? I mean, you got to get your mom something. I got my mom, and I do mean this. I got her an Aura frame, and she loves it. You update it with digital photos right from your phone. You can, you know, you take a new picture of the baby or a new picture of the house, something you want to send to your mom. Boom, put it on her. It's just a way that you could reach out and show somebody a picture without texting them or bullying them into looking at your phone. You can just update your Aura frame for, you know, what a gift. Give them the gift of new pictures and photos of a... Also, got unlimited storage, which is huge because people are like, well, how many photos you got? Guess what? Unlimited storage. You can personalize your gift, and they have a gift box, which includes... packaged in a premium gift box with no price tag. So when they get it, they're not like, oh, this is what you think of your mother on Mother's Day. It's named number one by Wirecutter, and you can save on gifts moms love by visiting AuraFrames.com. For a limited time, listeners can get $25 off their best-selling Carver Matte Frame with code SOTER. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code SOTER. AuraFrames.com, promo code SOTER. Sports show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Warby Parker is so nice and cool. Back in the day before I got my LASIK surgery, which, by the way, I will be returning to glasses. I understand that. when you get glasses, you're like, where the hell do I go? Where do I get caught up? I'm telling you, man, these are one of those things where this is a sponsor now, but it's a sponsor because I actually used it. When I used to wear glasses, I would go to Warby Parker. They have, first off, checkups in the store, and then you just go to the front of the store and you can pick up, you can pick the frames that your new glasses are going to be. So it's everything you need right there, including also if you want contacts. But as like I said, eye exams, sunglasses that are prescription, huge, all in one place, which makes everything a lot easier. Maybe the best part of Warby Parker, for every pair they sell, they also give a pair to someone in need. That's kind of nice. With all the greed that's going on in the world, it's like, hey, thank you for giving someone that can't see free glasses. Probably a big gift. Right now, buy one prescription pair. There we go. And get 20% off any additional prescription pairs. They really are like, hey, say prescription. We know you kind of have a tough one. But it's true. Right now, buy one prescription pair. Get 20% off any additional prescription pairs at warbyparker.com/soder. That's 20% off additional prescription pairs when you go to warbyparker.com/soder. warbyparker.com/soder, of course. Here's the thing about Hunter S. Thompson that I think got misconstrued to younger generations. He's not being an asshole to be an asshole.
No.
He's being himself and almost wedging himself into places and going, this is just who I am.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do weird shit to you. But he wasn't going out of his way to like attack people.
No.
Just fucking with them if they came into his proxy. He just came around him.
And he's making fun of himself. He seems kind of like a clown quite a bit.
Well, he's like, I'm an idiot. I ate all my cantaloupe or grapefruit.
Yeah.
And if you go read his first Gonzo, I mean, Hell's Angels could be argued as his first Gonzo experience.
Well, the thing about the Kentucky Derby.
That's the first one. Fear and Loathing at the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, which was where he discovered his style, basically.
Well, and the first time he worked with Ralph Steadman.
Yeah.
And Ralph Steadman came out.
And he's so amazing.
Just a British guy that's like, what in the fuck is this? And he's like, talking about, and you know, because you're from Louisville, he's like, oh, everyone thinks the Kentucky Derby is this high society thing. And he's like,
Bunch of animals.
That's what he wanted to show. And the way that Ralph drew it, forget if it was for Harper's Bazaar, I forget which magazine it was for that he wrote that, but you see the original illustrations, and he nails it. He nails, what I like about Ralph Steadman is, he nails the monstrosity of very wealthy people.
Yes.
He really nails the, like...
Oh, he's incredible. He reminds me, like, you see, like, Weimar art, like, German art, like where it's so grotesque.
Yes.
And just, like, all the decadence in people's faces.
Yeah.
Ralph Steadman, he's one of my all-time favorites.
And if you watch that documentary and hearing him talk about, like, meeting Hunter and, like...
Yeah.
Because Hunter S. Thompson just wanted to shoot guns.
He's a big gun guy.
Yeah, and they brought it up. There's a New York Times article that just came out about, was his suicide, like, you know... I read the article. I got sent it. Because my friends know I'm really into Hunter S. Thompson, and my friend Vic and my friend Jason sent it to me, and they were like, have you read this? And I read it, and I stopped midway through because I was like, you can't trust any piece of media now.
Well, what was it saying? I don't know.
It was basically saying that his wife, his second wife, Anita, didn't really trust that it was suicide, but his son was going like, my dad himself.
Of course. And also, the amount he loves Hemingway.
And also, agreed.
It's really ripped it off.
He also talked about it.
It's an homage to Hemingway.
He talked about it a lot. The reason I put down the article and was not interested in it, it was because of his suicide letter. That was the most Hunter S. Thompson thing.
Of course. What called, this is going to hurt or something?
No, it's called Football Season is Over.
Yeah. And No more pain.
Yeah. No, because he said that was when, after the Super Bowl was when he was always the most depressed.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have football. Because he loved football. And what I loved about Hunter S. Thompson was he was a 49ers fan.
Yeah.
Because of his time in San Francisco.
Oh.
And then he liked the Denver Broncos because of his time in Aspen at Woody Creek.
Oh, nice.
And he was a gambler, but in a real way.
Yeah.
He wasn't an app gambler.
Yeah.
He was I'm going to put money down. I need the rush.
Yeah.
I need skin on the game. That kind of shit, which I respect.
He definitely himself, because it's like.
But I started reading it, and they were like talking about his ex-wife trying to get this weed strain approved, and like how she still lives in Woody Creek, and she'll rent it out to Airbnb. And I was kind of like,
what are they trying to be like? What do you mean, like a weed conspiracy?
No, they're trying. It just sounded like she was trying to drum up business.
Sell stuff
on it with his name on it.
Yeah.
Which is like when his son is like, dude, my dad killed himself.
Why do they? They always have side conspiracies about people where it makes 100% sense. They, like Kurt Cobain.
Yes.
They're like, maybe it wasn't. It's like every song's like a suicide note.
He's like, I want to kill myself. I'm going to do it with the shotgun.
Oh, man. I think it was Courtney or whatever. Love.
The only time suicide conspiracies I think are right, and this is because of Big J on the bonfire, he thinks the hanging yourself on a doorknob is autoerotic asphyxiation and they fucking fuck up.
You think that's what was doing in prison?
No, I think he was murdered by the government. I think he was
killed. I could go either way on that, which is the most I've gone to a conspiracy theory because I'm very against it.
You think
usually.
He might have been choke-jerking it?
No. I think he could have committed suicide.
I'll tell you right now.
He definitely wasn't happy in that situation.
No. He also had a lot of information.
He did have a lot of information.
That's the point where you go.
It really can go both ways. I could see him getting murdered, though I just don't believe anyone has the competence to do it and get away with it. I certainly don't believe Trump can do it and not like talk about it in a tweet.
Oh, he would
murder Epstein today.
Yeah, he would bring it up in a way as a brag.
He'd be like, I just put it on Truth Social. I didn't know it'd go out.
He'd be leaning against the frame of Air Force One and he'd go, well, I killed Jeffrey Epstein. You didn't care about that. And you're like, you can't say that. Epstein would, to me, it would make sense that he killed himself because of the loss of power. Because that's a guy, that guy like that, that's all of his shit is like control.
I would kill myself if I was in his situation then. Like,
I don't know, man, because I like the idea of just blowing people's shit up. Of just being like, I'm going to rock your shit.
True, but if you're like a narcissist and the whole world hates you and you're about to have like judgment.
Yeah.
Like suicide is definitely an option in that. You know?
100%.
I mean, that's the thing. I just think like, I feel like, but murder, it could possibly be. I still think... Even that, I still think like it's probably suicide. I guess I just think incompetence really destroys most conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just
9/11
like,
being an inside job, there's no way that it would have not leaked.
He can't complete a full sentence, but he can complete 9/11.
The only way I can see it being, the only reason I can see conspiracy theories working is if they... like don't tell Bush if it's like one of those things, like what they've been doing with like alien technology.
Yeah.
Where they go
implausible deniability.
People don't even know.
Yeah.
Like how like the government has parts of the government that the government doesn't even know about.
But you
and
know,
it goes like we control all the technology that foreign alien, you know.
Yeah, because
like,
Trump would bring it up. I guess maybe they hit.
So would a Clinton.
Yeah.
So they're all narcissists.
Yeah.
To be a president, you have to fucking love yourself.
But my issue with conspiracy theories is that eventually. You try to get there and you can't make it sense all the way. So you throw in Jews at the end to finish it off, you know?
Well,
it's like the glue that holds together conspiracy theories.
Yeah, you guys are, really are like the slapstick.
Yeah.
For, you know, like.
Yeah, we're the cement or
you know, he puts it on and he goes, stop, leak, you just Jews.
Yeah,
just
it holds it all together. Because you're like, well, what about this? And we're like, well, that doesn't make sense. The Jews. And you're like, ah.
I see in a world where I'm undereducated. And not into comedy, where I believe that a lot more.
For sure.
Because it always blew my mind when I was younger that I didn't see a lot of Jewish families with drinking problems. Mm. That was one of the first conspiracy theory that I noticed.
Just we get tired when we drink.
You guys did this thing. It's hard. All my mom's friends that were Jewish would do this thing where they would have two drinks and go, oh, that's... That's enough.
It's very accurate.
And all the other goys that we knew were just fucking pounding.
I
know.
I think that's where anti-Semitism started.
Drunk.
You see Jews have self-control, and you're like, I fucking hate you all.
That's what I mean. And the self-control.
You're good with money. You have self-control.
That would explain the banks.
Yeah.
That would explain the fucking thing. With the
what,
like,
you're not, you think you're better than me because you don't get drunk and lose all your money? Yeah. Fuck you, you Jews.
Yeah, you guys took down the towers.
There's truth to that.
I believe it.
There is a sense of responsibility. Like, yeah.
If you think about it with money, you go, well, I'm going to save a little.
Yeah.
And you go, why are you saving it? Blow it all. Fucking,
the goy is just like throwing the money away. Yeah.
Because the thing that I talked to Louis Katz about, that we laughed about, is I always said my friends that were Jewish were always very horny.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, why are you so horny? And Louis Katz is one of my favorite human beings on earth.
Yeah.
Because he has this... Number one, he's a hilarious comic.
Great guy, yeah.
Great human being. But he has this thing where he isn't a yes man. Yeah. Where if you say something to him and he doesn't agree with it, he pushes back. He goes, yeah, I don't think that's true.
You mean honest?
Yes. Yes, he's honest. I've been talking shit about people. We've been having dinner and I've been talking shit about people and he goes, I don't think that's true. And it'll stop me and go like, yeah, maybe I have personal feelings.
You know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I feel like I kind of am similar and have people not like me because of that. Even if someone says a movie they like that, well, I didn't like, that'll break.
That's where I tell you, I go, all right.
Let's but I choose honesty.
You're getting a real conspiracy theory on this.
I choose honesty over people liking me.
I admire that. I admire that in a way that as a people pleaser. Yeah. I admire that quality as much as I do people that go to the gym consistently.
Yeah, yeah.
I go, I don't know how the fuck you do that.
Yeah.
I did it for a little bit, and it's very hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard. But I asked him, I was like, why are all my Jewish friends horny? And he goes, because we don't have shame attached to sex like you guys do. And I was like,
very true.
When he said that,
very true. It
we were at the Sacramento Punchline.
Yeah.
And it was like a light bulb went off in my head. And I was very like, true. That makes so much
because
sense.
with original sin and Christianity, you're guilty with your thoughts.
Yes.
And Judaism, you're not guilty with your thoughts. And Judaism, it's actually about the deeds.
Sure.
And to the point where you don't even have to have faith, you just do the deeds and the faith can come later.
Yeah.
So we don't have this we don't have the shame. Yeah, I don't have it. I really don't.
It really is insane to me because I've always had I've had every nut in my life has had shame attached
really?
To
it. Really? In some way. Now, are you Catholic?
No, but my mom was.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I was raised Episcopalian, which is English Catholic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which, if you don't know, was only created so that the King of England could get divorced.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
which
truly
is pretty funny.
The only reason why he did it was like, I got to get rid of this bitch.
Just a religion over getting rid of a bitch.
Yeah. And I've always, my friends that are religious, I know a lot of Catholics. I have very good friends that are Catholic. I respect their faith. If you're Catholic, I totally agree with it. I don't believe in organized religion.
Yeah, yeah.
At all. It doesn't make sense to me.
Organized religion, yeah.
It just feels like a store you're going to buy. It's like going to a store instead of farming.
Well, yeah,
it's like you're telling me if I can only buy lettuce from Fairway, and that's the true lettuce.
It's kind of like, religion's kind of like a bunch of schizophrenics having an agreed upon delusion.
Yes.
Like, well, most schizophrenics are just alone.
Yeah.
And they just have their vision. It's like schizophrenics working together.
It's unity and schizophrenia.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go, this is right. And you're like, but that was written by a man.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they got, because that was the questions I had. My mom was excommunicated from the church because she got divorced early.
Oh, wow. Which is the whole point of the thing was for the divorce.
Well, she was Catholic.
Oh, Catholic.
She was Irish Catholic.
Actually, then that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Hold on. I'm going to turn my fan on because it's getting hot in here. Guys, getting older is tough because you're like, you've got responsibilities. You got people that look for you for reasons, you know. And sometimes you need insurance and you're like, where the hell do I go with life insurance? Well, protect your family with life insurance from Ethos. You can get up to $3 million in coverage in as little as 10 minutes. All you got to do is go to ethos.com/soder. Application times may vary and rates may vary, but go get yourself covered. It takes 10 minutes to get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/soder. Again, that's ethos.com/soder. Application times may vary, rates may vary. Go get it done. Protect your family.
If you love comedy that keeps you guessing, playoff hockey is right up your alley. NHL on TNT has the best coverage, and it is just as entertaining as a great stand-up set. Paul Bissonnette is hilarious on the panel, and Wayne Gretzky breaks down the action like a pro. Every game is intense, with overtime and big hits that make every shift matter. Studio coverage adds to the fun, making it the best place to watch. Watch the Stanley Cup playoffs on TNT, TBS, True TV, and HBO Max.
I didn't even know she was sick. She seems so...
Wait, what? First off, I to let everyone know on the podcast, I got up to turn on the fan because it's hot in here. Catherine O'Hara died.
Hey, you could have waited on that one.
It really is a mood shift. Yeah. We're just in the middle of talking about religion.
Like, I was watching a movie and someone texted me that Robin Williams died in the middle of the movie. I mean, they didn't know I was watching it, but I'm like, damn, I really shouldn't have looked at my phone.
I was going to Coney Island to ride the roller coaster.
When
I
found out, really?
My friend Joey Owens texted me and he was like, Robin Williams killed himself. And I was like, What's up? I was about to get on a roller coaster. Do you know how weird that is? To be sad on a roller coaster? When they're like, watch your arms and legs. And I go...
Even at the end, Robin Williams stealing from Richard Jenny.
Oh, Richard Jenny did with a gun, though. That fucking, what a way he went out.
Don't fact check my joke. Anyway, like, Richard, what's his name? Richie Redding?
Yeah.
He's marrying a Jew. I was on stage. I'm like the Jew on the show last night. He goes up before me. He pulls a full Tim Watley. He talks about how he's marrying a Jew. All Jew jokes the whole time. I
this
swear
is what
to God.
We were talking about yesterday.
All Jew
the
jokes.
The Tim Watley thing.
And Holocaust jokes. He literally, and they're good. They were good too. Oh, he's like, my wife the other day, she was like, yeah, we have a Jew in the oven. I'm like, you're not supposed to say that because she's pregnant. You know, yeah. I fucked up that joke, but she's pregnant. Whatever. I really fucked that
That's
joke.
So funny.
Can you edit that so I think she's pregnant?
Watch Mike's editing skills.
But like, he's doing Jewish jokes, Holocaust jokes, and I'm like the Jew on the show.
You go, that's my stuff.
I'm like, what the fuck?
We were talking about Tim Watley. Where Katie said that.
He's like,
said, does it offend you as a Jewish person? No, it offends me as a comedian.
His opening thing, and it was very funny. He's very funny.
Richie Redding's the man. He's been so on the podcast. Funny. I love Richie.
I've
known
Richie
a long time.
I am joking. But
he
like,
used to open for Cat Williams.
Oh, did he?
Like, not a little.
I guess now he can do black jokes because he opened for Cat Williams.
You see him once, he's like, I'm been telling these motherfuckers, these Jews are out here. He's doing Cat, doing Jewish material.
His opening joke is...
I can't believe I'm Jewish, bitch.
It's all right, I know. Okay. His opening joke was like, he was like, yeah, we're raising the kid Jewish because I do not have the energy to argue with a pregnant Jewish woman.
That's great.
If there's anyone you don't want to argue with, it's a pregnant Jewish woman. I'm like, what the fuck?
That's a good joke.
It's a good joke.
Yeah.
He's fucking... And then I had to go up. I'm like, frankly, I'm married to a Catholic, so I could just do Catholic jokes because that's not how it fucking works now. But
is your wife Catholic?
She was raised Catholic. Yeah.
Do you see the? It's weird about Catholics is because they still, even if they're not Catholic anymore, they still it's in there.
Yeah.
It's in there until the day they die. My mom is still like. Easter is fucking huge for
them. Yeah. Well, hell's not something you really, you learn that at a young age. It's hard to fully
this is the same thing about the sexual shame. Jews don't have hell.
We don't have hell. Yeah, I mean.
It really is like, you go, what if you were to put monotheistic religions out there, as far as the one I'd go, talk to me about the one without hell.
Yeah.
Go, now.
Hell is.
You can't mix your dairy and your meat. And I go, well, now we're fucked up. No.
Hey, I'd choose not believing in hell over a cheeseburger.
Well, I didn't know what kosher was, and my first job ever was at my friend Adam's parents owned a kosher bakery Denver, and I was 13, and they're like, "Yeah, you can work here. You just work in the back with like the dough and stuff and bring it in." And then I got a lunch break, and it was my first lunch break at my first job ever, and I walked across the parking lot to Burger King. And got a double Whopper cheese. And I was about to walk in, and one of the guys that worked there went, "What's in that bag?" And
oh,
I went,
shit.
A double Whopper with cheese. And he went, "This is a fucking kosher." I was outside. I was like about in the back, about to walk in. And he goes, "You can't bring that in here." He goes, "If you bring that in here, we got to get a rabbi with a flame thrower." Seriously, a flamethrower to fucking bless all the ovens. And I was like, I just want to see that. I almost brought the cheeseburger in to be like,
sold.
Dude, go get your boy. I want to fucking tell him to fire up the flamethrower.
You know why you can't have a mixed milk and meat?
Why?
Honestly, it's because it's perverse, and which kind of makes sense. Cooking an animal in the milk, in its mother's milk, that's what it says in the Bible. It's fucked up that we do that.
That is crazy.
You're killing a cow and then eating it with the milk of that cow's mother.
That is wild. That is wild that it was a Jewish person that went, a little fucked up, I don't know. You guys think this is a little fucked up? And they go... Yeah.
It really is. That really is what it's about. They're like, it's like you shouldn't, don't cook meat in its mother's milk. They're just kind of like, it's kind of perverse.
I took a theology class in like my freshman year of college or whatever. And they were talking about how a lot of these beliefs in religion were because they were like, people were getting sick.
Yeah.
And they had to write like Muslims, you know, it was the last monotheistic religion to be made.
Yeah.
And they were like, the pork thing was probably because people were getting sick eating pork.
Yeah, sanitation.
So they were like, no pork.
Yeah.
No alcohol.
Like, yeah.
It was like making people have a problem.
It was all just, I guess health issues. It was like the COVID vaccine.
Exactly. They're like, we're just putting this in, and they're like, no pork. And then it just held for thousands
of
years.
Suddenly Christianity came about.
Well, I think it goes Judaism, Christianity, Muslims.
Oh, Muslims last. Yeah. Because isn't it funny? Because it feels first, does it?
Well, Muslims, the thing that they don't get credit for is they acknowledge other messiahs.
Yeah, Jesus and Moses are both prophets. Yeah.
Both prophets the Muslim religion where you go, oh, shit.
It's kind of funny. You're like, they really bring everyone together.
They were trying to until they don't.
Until they don't.
Until they go, everyone must
die. It sounds on the surface very...
It is weird because you go, well, why are you guys trying to kill all the infidels if you're also acknowledging the infidels' main guys?
Yeah, you know, but it's...
that's what I was... What's interesting to me is like... I respect people that are religious because I go, well, you can commit.
Yeah, yeah. It's commitment.
It's a commitment in a way. That's what I'm saying. Like my friends that are Catholic, I know they go to a church on Wednesday and Sunday. And I'm like,
I'm just boring.
It was always
so boring.
I used to have to go with my mom and it was.
I'm basically choosing, I'd rather not have meaning in my life to just not be bored.
Did they want you to be like.
Yeah, I kept kosher till college.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the first non-kosher? What did you break with?
I've talked about this before, but it's I had chicken, which is just is unkosher if it's not prepared, right? You know,
okay, yeah.
Because meat with kosher has to be cut with a shechita knife. It's this knife that's really sharp, so the animal's supposed to die painlessly, even though.
Damn, you guys really do think about the animals.
We do. But it doesn't. But the problem, and this is kind of the problem with religion, is that now that is not the most humane way to kill an animal.
Sure, now it's like some machine that just crushes
just
their
heads. Just Javier Bardem it, right? but we still are doing what was humane. Like,
flip it.
How much of it lost on a
flip it. If I worked at a slaughterhouse, that's all I would do.
It'd be so funny.
Just to dress like that.
It'd be so funny if in no country. Like when he does that scene, the guy's like, "Are you just doing Two-Face for Batman?" Yeah.
He goes, "Oh, brother, I read the pulp comics. This is just Two-Face."
It just feels like Cort McCarthy just didn't know about Two-Face.
Yeah, it's so like when a comic's doing a bit that he doesn't know another comic has the bit of. He goes, "Do you know that guy does that bit?" He goes, "Son,
Cort McCarthy's like, I got a new villain. He gives riddles out."
Yeah, he goes, Cormac. I hate that. His 16-year-old lover goes, "You don't read Batman, do you?" Son of bed, chopping her gum.
I love the character from No Country. But that is very much a Two-Face thing.
Flip it. And he's like, you don't read Big Batman fan? That's all that guy had to say.
Just didn't know, but yeah.
You're a big Batman fan, son?
So Shechita knife was humane, but now it's not, you know.
Damn, you really throw some on that.
Shechita knife.
You really get in there. Shechita knife.
So I had chicken, and it was a big deal. It was college. I had a piece of chicken or a couple pieces, whatever. And I woke up the next day with a cold sore. For real, yeah. And I was like, you know, I assumed it was guilt. I assume God is...
What was it?
I think it was psychological guilt that led to a cold sore.
So when you ate the chicken, you were aware...
I also fucked a girl's herpes.
Also ate some pussy on a loose woman.
Yeah.
So when you ate it, were you like...
I felt
here
bad.
Here I go.
Yeah. Like, I'm not shameful about sex, but I was shameful about eating chicken. You know
That's
what I mean?
That's crazy. Honestly, I would take that trade. I would take that.
Yeah,
shameless nuts versus going like,
You get a cheeseburger, but you get hell and being ashamed every time you have sex.
Every time I squeeze a nut out, I go, who am I?
I don't feel guilty about masturbation at all, which is interesting.
I used to feel a lot of guilt about
people
it.
People tell me they do, and I have friends who actually have done the no fappening or whatever it's called. Yeah. And I'm just like,
by the way, those boys are just trying to edge as much as possible. That's just straight up gooning.
Sickos, yeah.
Yeah, you're not fucking... above anybody.
Well, you know what it is? Was like master, like, because I have friends who are like, yeah, you like who think they're sex addicts, but then they're also like, you're probably a sex addict too. You don't realize it. Not that I do anything like that,
sure.
But just I don't know, just thinking about it,
just enjoying sex.
But in my head, I'm just like, masturbation, even if it is an addiction, it's a healthy addiction.
I think it's, well, I don't know if
I mean, physically,
it
it's not bad for you.
I think it is the equivalent of devenoming a snake when they take that. When you see it, where they put the snake's head against the glass and the venom comes out, you're just devenoming yourself.
So you don't have to shoot up a school. Yeah.
Or you're not harassing a comedy club waitress.
Yeah, exactly.
You just are like, when you have empty nuts.
Right. Louis never jerked off, and that's why this happened.
Yes. And that's why he should have been doing it in his private life. Then he could have came in way more even-headed. But there is something to be said about like doing it and being... That's why like I think a lot of comics are surprised when they find out that every comic gets to their hotel room and jerks off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you're just devenoming yourself.
You got it.
For the city.
Well,
you know, I'm
off,
a visitor here. I should probably take the venom out of me.
Jacking off is like, after you jack off, you're kind of like, oh, I'm not stressed about things anymore.
You also go, go, who's that guy? I'm always like, what the fuck was I going through?
I know. There is, I don't feel shame, but I do feel that, like, Louis talks about it, like, you're back to reality, and you're like, it's like kind of like coming to at a car scene, a car traffic accident.
Yeah, it is how I used to feel when I would get drunk.
Yeah.
And then I'd wake up and I'd go like, who was that?
Yeah.
That wasn't me. And then that's how you get when you're like super horny. And then you're
right.
Like, fuck it. And then you masturbate and you go.
But you know, I have like a pretty strong libido because I guess I'm a Jew. But yeah.
Got that Hebe libido.
I got that Hebe libido. So like, I think jacking off is bad if you then are having sex with your partner later and you can't fuck.
Well, yeah.
That's wasting.
That's the fuel.
Yeah, it's the fuel. You're wasting your seed. But I can usually still fuck.
That's crazy.
So it's like. It's not an issue to me. In fact, I have enough libido where I can be a sex addict and fuck my wife consistently.
Yeah, that would be to me the point where I'd go, this might be too much.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think in my early 20s, I was like that, my 20s. And then as I hit my late 20s, I started being like, it was also coincided with me quitting drinking.
Because
when I quit drinking, I got like super horny.
Yeah.
And then it dissipated like within the year it started being like back to normal,
right? I mean, it's not as strong as it used to be, but I think
I would have had a higher libido if I wasn't so shamed about it.
Yeah probably.
I think I would have felt more inclined to be like, this is a good it would have made me go into it instead of going like,
well, I like
my problem,
right?
Is this a problem?
I think most guys, either if they have sexual problems, they lean towards either like coming early or not being able to get it up.
Sure.
I always lean towards coming early, which I always felt was like a sign of a libido.
Oh, really?
I'm so turned on.
I always took it as a sign of tenderness. That you're like, I'm so tender.
I'm so tender.
It's so tender. Please.
Kind of, please. You know, it's gentle, yeah.
You're just such a tender boy. But I always think it's interesting where you're like watching what people are sensitive towards or what people have shame for.
Yeah.
And then to see how they grow up and you go, that's the interesting part. And yes, this episode's brought to you by BetterHelp. But that's, to me, the interesting part of therapy is like following the cord to something and going like I remember asking my therapist, I was like, hey, is it possible that I was molested and I blocked it out? And that's the reason I have like a weird time being intimate. And my therapist was like, no, you just completely lack intimacy. He's like, you just need to work on you allowing intimacy in.
Yeah.
And you go, that's such a less sexy answer than going, I think you got sucked off by your uncle when you were 4. That's what I was hoping, because that's such an easy fix.
Well, I think the blocking out thing is pretty rare. I think usually when you get fucked, you remember it. When you get
But I do think there are people that block it out, because I do think there is a trauma response that goes, my body's, it's the same thing we were talking about with the government, about how they just wall off those conspiracy theories.
Right.
The government just walls off the rest of the government for finding out about it.
Right,
I think your brain can do that.
It can. People can also have false memories, too.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I think that's a very
like
dangerous
those
thing.
60 women Bill Cosby, allegedly.
All false memories. He would never do that. Like, go watch the Dennis bit on himself and tell me that man's a
wasn't that funny when people were defending him and it just kept on being more and more women, and they're like, eventually defending him became really exhausting.
It's that lady.
This woman's lying.
It's the meme of the lady smoking the cigarette out back of the Wendy's.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just like, I can't. I think what's crazy about the whole Cosby thing is that Hannibal did it in a riff. It wasn't even like a finished joke.
It was a riff someone filmed and it ended.
And he was like, pick up your pants. And he goes, what about all those what about all those ladies you and everyone was like, what?
It was like it was just like,
it really was a throwaway line.
Filmed on a phone. The original, I feel like there's three major comic moments that were filmed. There was that, Bill Burr telling everyone to go
in
fuck
Philly
himself
on the virus tour.
Yeah, telling everyone to get fucked by big black dicks or whatever.
When he was on Bobby Kelly's podcast with like me, Nate, Lewis, and List, we asked him about that. And he was like, I was afraid that was going to become my thing.
Right.
Where like I would go do stand up and people would just fucking yell at me and then I would have to fight back.
And he did get bigger from that, right?
Which that was a viral
moment. It's interesting.
Because they booed Dom Herrera. They booed like a bunch of people before him, and he went out like looking for the fight.
Yeah. And it's interesting because people, Bill Burr's such a pure artist, and we talk shit about people who go viral for something. Mm-hmm. He really did go viral for something. Like,
that
you
was like one of the first
that.
Viral stand-up moments.
You had that, and then Kramer's crowd work that went.
Big J quotes that in the funniest way, where we were making fun of someone. What if he did that? And then he said, and then Big J hits the line. He goes, "See, there's that word again. There's that word." And it's
the
like
Lenny Bruce trying to like see the George Carlin. Yeah. They're just words.
Yeah. Big J nails that exact part of it every time.
We're all just words.
That's what he goes. There's that little word. He goes, shut
it's
the
like
fuck
full,
up, racist.
It's full George Carlin. He's it like, is. Fuck you N-word piece of shit. Yeah. These words.
Yeah. Because when you see how mad he gets at. Dude, when you watched have you watched the Letterman apology recently?
It was Michael Richards or Jerry Seinfeld?
Richards and Seinfeld's there.
I remember Seinfeld being there. I remember the audience laughing and Seinfeld going, it's not funny. Yeah. And I remember
Richards
thinking.
Michael Richards is trying to think of, because he comes on and they go, this is like before the internet's everywhere.
Yeah.
So they just go like, oh, it's Kramer. And he goes, I'm really sorry. And they go, oh, and Jerry's like, it's not funny.
I always felt it was a little Seinfeld saying that. I don't know why. It just really rubbed me the wrong way that the audience is laughing because they don't know what's going on. And he's like, quit laughing. But it's like, you're here trying to save your residuals for Seinfeld. Dude,
and we won't have to edit this out because I'll never have to bump into him. He was a guy that when I moved here, I was so excited to like see. Yeah. I was obsessed with the documentary Comedian. Obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It's why Colin Quinn is like my favorite part of that whole documentary.
Oh, amazing, yeah.
But I was obsessed with that documentary. My friend Zach gave it to me on my 17th
birthday.
It's
pretty genius. It's like, who do you get? Who can you cast to make Seinfeld look likable?
Orny Adams. Make Seinfeld look...
Look, just grounded.
The man. The when he tells the story about the band landing in the field at Stand Up New York.
Yeah.
I was like, he's the man. Yeah. He understands stand-up. And it was like, I was a comedy nerd, so it fed everything I wanted. I was moving. I was like, part of the reason why I moved to New York City was tough crowd, Opie and Anthony, and Comedian.
Yeah, yeah.
And like watching Comedian, I was like, I still think about that documentary where I'm in the hallway about to go up at the Cellar.
Mm.
And I think about that, like Sherrod, when Jerry walks up and Sherrod Small is hosting. And he goes, go up. Sherrod goes, you going up?
Wait, Sherrod's in it?
Very young Sherrod Small.
Oh, really?
The first 5 minutes, when it shows Manny go, there's a certain compulsion I've noticed.
Oh, wow, I forgot that.
Go watch that documentary. I used to watch it once a year.
God, Sherrod Small's like 400 years old. He's like, I remember
he's
when-
Forrest Gump.
I opened for Mark Twain.
Yeah. He goes, man, Mark Twain's real name is Samuel Clemens. And you go, oh, my God.
I'm impressed by that shit.
You talking about Sammy? Fuck Sammy. I knew Sammy before he went by Mark
just
Twain.
He's been around for so long.
He's in like all these old pictures, like Jack Nicholson in The Shining. It's like 1919 in Sherrod.
Don Rickles do his first open mic. I was like, this kid has something.
I was friends with two out of the three Marx brothers. You go, holy shit, that's fucking crazy. But that documentary, like, this is how Joe List and I became such good friends.
Oh, really?
Because we would go do open mics and, like, have beers or whatever. We'd quote it at each other without queuing each other up on it. We'd do the Colin Quinn where he's in the tuxedo and he goes, what are you doing this weekend? He goes, this weekend? Working here. That was like one of our favorite lines.
But you know what? You know what Seinfeld says on that? I just actually really think it's not true. I've learned Seinfeld at one point goes, even if you're a celebrity, even if you're Jack Nicholson up there, after a couple lines, you're like, what's next? And I'm like, that's not true. You can be a celebrity on stage. And maybe they won't laugh a lot, but they'll say they love it because crowds are star fuckers.
True. But I push back on that. I think Jerry's right. And I would say...
Pulling a real Louis Katz right now.
He's my inspirado. I'm gonna do the thing.
I know this is hard for you too. You're such a people pleaser. I'm gonna disagree with you.
Baruch Adah, find your inner power.
You have the voice in your head. Your instinct
come on, Daniel, do it.
Your instinct is just to be like, you're totally right.
I go, God, what a good point. Push back. You're like, you son of a bitch.
Like, I'm gonna disagree.
But
disagree.
Madonna at the Cellar. She bombed.
Did she bomb?
First 5 minutes, it's exactly what Seinfeld said. They said, all right, Madonna. And then she fucking bombed.
All right, well,
she bombed so bad, Liz wouldn't send me the tape. And I asked. I said, Liz, I got to see that set. And Liz goes, I'm not fucking sending you that tape. And I was like, fair. That's fair.
All right.
I wanted to watch that. And she kept doing the thing.
Let me rephrase. a famous man. No. Yeah.
that might not be wrong.
Well, I saw Michael Rapaport do an hour once, and the audience seemed happy. There wasn't anything. But he sounds like he's a comic.
He sounds like...
he does a rhythm.
There are fugazis in this business.
Yeah.
That you go if from...
Half of comics.
Well, yeah. From a 15-foot... My buddies, when I worked in Alaska, they'd call these... It was such a mean thing, but I thought it was so funny. They'd call women 15-foot fakeouts, where you go, like, from 15 feet away. These guys that live on boats.
Yeah.
But they'd go, like, they'd see a woman, they'd go, that girl's hot, 15-foot fakeout.
Yeah.
And you walk up, and in Alaska, it was so funny.
I mean, that's probably the majority of comics. Yeah.
But I'm saying from their act, you go, oh, that's funny.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, because they do the cadence.
They do the rhythm.
They do the cadence, and they go, oh, it's probably how a lot of rappers feel.
Yeah.
Because they go, this motherfucker doesn't, this guy ain't saying shit.
But it's just, yeah.
But he goes, hummus is home. And they go, I don't even know if you're rapping.
I had that realization. I was listening to a recording once at a club. I performed, and I was listening to the audio the next day. And I do this one joke. I mean, I was doing well, so there was already a rhythm going. I did this one joke, and I got the punchline completely in reverse, or just where it didn't make sense, and the audience still laughed.
Yeah.
And it was like realizing how empty this is in that moment.
When Joe List became friends with Louis C.K., which to watch in real time was incredible.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're talking about me, him, and Nate used to sit around and debate, like, oh, my God, when that special came out. I remember being at Barcelona Bar, having beers, and being like, this joke sucked. This joke was incredible. Yeah. We were arguing with it. I think me and Nate were team Burr and List was team Louis.
So
we would argue like, no, this joke for joke, literally go joke for joke. But we were friends and then List becomes friends with Louis. And List would always say this thing about Chris Rock where he would go, there's a line in, I think it's Bigger and Blacker, where he says, when you're white, the sky's the limit. And when you're black, the limit's the sky.
Yeah.
And List would like, he would give like a speech about it.
Where he'd
be like, it doesn't, it's the same thing. But the rhythm.
The limit's the sky. Yeah, you're right.
And he's doing the Chris Rock thing. Where he's going, the limit is the sky. And it like gets a huge laugh. Dude, this is one of my favorite stories. I mean, I don't know if Joe's ever told this publicly. So if he does, if I get in trouble, Joe, I love you and forgive me for telling the story. But I think this is so funny. So Joe's on the road with Louis and they're having like breakfast or something. I forget where they are. They might even be in New York, but they're having a meal and they're talking comedy. And List brings this up, this point that he's opined on before I know he has in the chamber.
Yeah.
And he brings it up to Louis and Louis's texting. And Joe's like, yeah, it just fucking doesn't make any sense. And Louis puts his phone down and he goes, yeah, I just texted Rock that you said that. And then Joe goes, you don't fucking text him? Why are you fucking texting him? I just want to break it down. I thought that was one of my favorite moments. Louis's like just listening and he goes, yeah, I just texted him what you said. I just thought that was like one of my favorite moments where you go, fuck, that would give me so much anxiety where I go, don't text him yet. Please edit that.
I mean, it's like... Laughter is kind of instinctual, so it's like you need the rhythm. Like, it is true. Like,
I think that's why I hated being a people pleaser so much. I also think that's why my stand-up was weak until my HBO special, was because I was such a people pleaser that I would do bits that would get reactions, and I would still kind of know that the bit wasn't finished, but it got a good reaction. So I go, well, it's making people,
laugh,
so it's good. And until my HBO special, that was the first time where I was like, what we were talking about at the beginning, like junkyarding shit.
Yeah.
This bit isn't good, but there's good lines in it.
Right, well, you have to learn how to crush, and then you can make the decision to fucking, you know.
Yeah, because people don't realize shit can crush.
Yeah.
Like, bullshit can crush.
That's why, I mean, comedy is like the one art form.
Which I really know. I hate calling it art. It's carny work.
The truth is, it's half an art form and half like a sport.
I think it's half carnival behavior.
Yeah.
Half fear of doing actual art. That's what I think it is.
Well, let's just say this. It can be artistic.
I think it's best, it can be artistic.
But it's one field where you're just with so many used car salesmen who just, and I just have to like fucking Hemingway didn't have to hang out with some fucking
some beat writer that's like, yeah, I don't know, dude, I'm a pulp writer. Yeah. I'm just making up murder
I just write
stories.
The same poem every week to get pussy.
Are you still working on your fish book? It's called Old Man in the Sea.
Yeah.
It's kind of a big deal. Never mind. Yeah, but
you can tell it's a shitty field because it's also the only, if it is an art form, it's the only field where some of the biggest names endorse Trump.
Well, it's also We're at the point now where stand-up has left its containment area and spread to the point where, and I'm sorry, you know, if you're a fan of this podcast and you've listened, you've heard me make this point before, we inherited everybody that should have been an MTV VJ, should have been a DJ, should have been a party promoter, should have been
a serial rapist,
should have been a serial criminals,
focused,
criminals and bad people.
Files.
You just get people that come in here because they know they can fake it.
Yeah.
And it'll be
and taken. They're still called a comedian.
Sure.
Even though I'm
I know people that grew up, I knew people that are successful at comedy, right?
Yeah.
That don't like comedy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know. Yeah. I can name over and again. You know the rule.
I'm the second part of that.
Yeah, yeah. But if you see me live, I'll give you names. I will not give it publicly. But if in person, you come to one of my shows and you go, "Hey, you were talking about this," bop, bop, bop. I'll give you the list. I don't give a fuck.
Like imagine
if it's off air. I'll
it
give
is,
you the
list. It is like imagine if you're just like what's it like? You're just like a classical composer, and there's another person who's called a classical composer, but all they are is a racist.
Yeah,
they're just a racist.
Beethoven's like, do you understand? I'm fucking deaf.
This guy
is still writing music.
This guy is just saying racist things, and he has millions of followers.
Beethoven watching like someone like that, where he's not even a composer, and he's watching them going, "Come on, I'm not even trying." He's like, "I've been composing since I was 10. I can't even fucking hear what I'm saying." And they're like, "No, no, no." It's just like, it's like the flight of the like if you hear like Bach or something, yeah. He's like, "Bach the heck."
I like how he got, I think he got deaf in his like 50s, but I like how he still takes the retard voice.
Oh no, I'm giving him the deaf
voice.
That's
the deaf
life.
Voice, which the deaf voice, people took the deaf voice to do the R word voice.
Yeah, because it's
not, like how I'm being politically correct after I already said it. You already burned it. Can we edit that so I'm that's not.
Like, what are you kissing during a rape? It's like crazy. Like,
this N-word comes over with his African-American.
I go, you let it fly with an R? You're fucking crazy. But yeah, I think the deaf voice is the R-word of voices.
Yeah, for sure. Beethoven, did you go deaf like a month ago?
Yeah, he goes,
don't you know how to talk?
Shooting their lips. What? That's just Beethoven. What the fuck did you say?
But so... yeah, it's just like there are people in our field who are just, we know comedians, and I know these people who go on stage and just say mean things.
Yeah, and then they go, I'm joking.
Yeah, but they're not even funny. They're just mean, and everyone's like, that's awesome.
Katie and I were talking about this exact thing yesterday, which is one of my pet peeves is when someone says something mean and it doesn't get a reaction they want. No, so they joking. Go, I was just joking. Yeah. You know, but you weren't.
But you weren't until you made, that. Yeah.
We were talking about.
You're just joking. Like when I asked a girl if I want to make a move and she's like, no. And I'm like, it was just a bit.
Yeah, exactly. But we were talking about the coach of the Denver Broncos, Sean Payton, their quarterback, Bo Nix, broke his ankle. And then it turned out that he had had a broken ankle in high school and a broken ankle in at Auburn before he transferred to Oregon. And Sean Payton went, oh, in that case, I wouldn't have drafted him if I would have known that. And he's like, no, I'm just joking. And he goes, no, that was real.
that was real.
I actually meant that shit. And then a couple days later, he was like, yeah, he kind of hid information from me that that ankle was a problem. And Bo Nix was like, I never hid any information. And he's like, and I don't think he should have said that. And you're like, so he wasn't joking. Because he did a second thing where you go, that is what you believe.
Well, it's literally like, yeah, like I remember the first time I made a move on a girl, I was like, we should like make out. And then she
I remember that. I used to do that all the time.
And that would have been a
joke.
Wouldn't
it be funny if I kissed you right
and
now?
And that's literally what Trump is doing with maybe we'll cancel the elections.
Well,
it's a joke unless I get away with it.
Yeah. Which Obama should have really, if he would have known that was coming, Obama doing that would have been funny. He's like, I'm going to fuck every white woman in America. I'm just joking.
My favorite
I'm going to make you all have black husbands. Just joking. Back to our point of being in a field where you watch people fake it. I think that's important. Because I think that makes good comics more valuable.
Yeah.
And I think we're going through a place right now where people are going, there's so much shit out there. And I go, there is a lot of shit.
But there's very few good comics.
But that's what's good about it.
Yeah,
embrace them.
Yeah.
Like, blow on those embers.
Yeah,
Fan those flames.
No, I really...
I'm very loud. I like having you on here because you put out great fucking comedy.
Thanks, buddy.
Morbidly Jewish.
Morbidly obese, fat morbidly piece of obese. Shit.
I don't even know what the name of special is.
Morbidly kike, fat kike, whatever it is.
Fat Heeb is out now. Morbidly Jewish. If you want to recall Fat Heeb, you can.
It's so funny if I just called it morbidly obese. just me. It's just morbidly obese.
Please go watch Run On Special. He is, I know we talk a lot of shit about people out there that suck. He's not one of them. He's a fucking great comic.
That means a lot coming
and,
from you.
I just genuinely love this shit, and I love people that love this shit, and that's always what I want to push is like, there are people that grew up watching Woody Allen or Mel Brooks that when they were little, they're like, I could never do this. And then you get to do it and you go like, how cool is it I get to do
this? Yeah. No, I would like sometimes someone will comment like, you're not funny to me. And I don't want to be arrogant, but I just kind of want to comment back. It's like, I write jokes. Like, you should like that's such a rare thing.
It's like, my thing is I have too many tax returns that disagree.
Yeah.
You can just go look at tax returns and go, you might not think I'm funny. That's fine. You don't have to think I'm funny. There are a lot of people that do. You know what I always think about it is my favorite thing about being funny and what's always got me in trouble at other jobs was I always liked making my coworkers laugh. And I always liked being a part of the job where it was like a relief, where it was like we're waiting tables, we're sitting off in the hutch making each other laugh. If I'm working at Bed Bath & Beyond, we're unpacking boxes, making each other laugh. It's always been, I'm at the bar having a beer with you. I would say stylistically, that's what I want as my comedy. You don't have to be in the break room with us.
Yeah.
If you don't like it,
of course,
go empty other boxes. You don't like it, move down the bar and have a beer. I'm not one of these people that's like, fuck you, what you like is shit.
Yeah.
You can find something you like, and if it ain't me, it ain't me, but I don't need to engage with you anymore.
No, of course not. No. No, you just, it's not worth it. Yeah, and there's enough people on the planet, you can just find whoever.
8 billion. There's someone for you.
When I think about 8 billion, I'm like, I really should have a bigger fan base. Like,
every time it breaks my heart.
Like, there's 8 billion people, and I got 20 people to see me in Kansas.
But you don't realize 2 billion of them live in China. Miles below our poverty line, where if you brought him a glass of clean water, they'd be like, you're my favorite comic. You're my favorite comic, and I'm subscribed to your Patreon because it's indoor plumbing. Your Patreon is a bath.
Right.
And you're like, that's pretty cool. But Morbidly Jewish is the special. The link is in the bio down here of the video. Run On is fucking hilarious, and I'm glad you came by.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, buddy.